Frog and Cheetah is my life's work and my life's insurance.
Hello and welcome to The Frog and Cheetah, an aspirational Brokenwood Mysteries podcast where dreams come true. My name is Amelia.
And I'm Rebecca.
And today we are going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 2, Over Her Dead Body, original air date November 7th, 2016. Now, Raz.
Yes.
This isn't your ordinary episode. Dante, go in expecting a smooth plath because this gets wild.
Amelia's back on form. Omicron's peaked.
It's filled with unexpected comings and goings. Yates. and we find out that one of our recurring cast members unexpectedly Adcock.
You mean he's a homosexualist?
He's Shakespeare, if you know what I mean.
No one's calling it that.
and Raz, if you listen very closely, you can hear a Lindsay Bird in the background of one of the shots.
Oh my god!
it's an episode about a poet,
and those are the poets.
And those are some poets that I remembered. I really wanted to get Shelley in there and Wordsworth, but I think we all got our Wordsworth in the end.
Oh, man. Are you going to get Shelley in there?
I can't think of a pun for Shelley. There are no shells in the episode.
I thought you were going to do something about Shelley Beach Road.
I don't know. Maybe next time.
Maybe next poet episode.
I'm sure there'll be another poetry episode. Because this is not just the poetry episode. It's also the distinct for legal purposes Cluedo episode.
They never say Cluedo in the whole episode.
They never say Cluedo. They say
a well-beloved
detective game.
They say the game and they say the thing that we do and the group and the Sunday night.
I was actually thinking, though, that this could, it might not just be a copyright thing, it could also be a localization thing. Don't most people call it Clue? Is it like just Cluedo in New Zealand or is it Cluedo in Britain as well?
No, it's Cluedo everywhere except the States, it's Clue.
Ah. Fascinating. Have you ever seen that Clue movie?
No.
It's great. It's really good.
It's
got Tim Curry. Knives Out is heavily inspired by the Cluedo movie.
I've been past the House of Knives.
For those listening abroad, the House of Knives is...
anywhere outside central Auckland. I think two-thirds of the listeners are not
It's a
in
solid
Auckland.
Proportion. Yeah. It's a knife shop, but they put really threatening Christian messages on their windows, so it's like a shop and all the windows are filled with knives, and then on the window it'll say like, he bled for you, he died for you, like
and they go,
he's basically like
Easter.
Jared's auntie.
Yeah, Jared's unexpected auntie.
Should we get into it? All right. So, what's the opening shot for this one?
I don't remember.
It's in
the church. It's St.
No,
Judas.
It's not. It's not. We get some establishing shots of the town.
Oh yeah, we did. Yeah, that's what it was.
Some beautiful atmospheric dawn shots
of lovely Brokenwood, and then straight to St. Judas Church,
which is definitely St. Judas.
Yeah.
And so I think it
wasn't
must...
just wishful thinking from us last week that the Brokenwood Church is called St. Judas. It actually is called St. Judas.
I think it must be Judas Thaddeus, you know?
That'll explain it.
The other Judas. You know, everyone in the Bible has there's three names to go around, so they'll get funny nicknames.
Yeah. They should have called it the other Judas.
The other Saint Other Judas.
Judas Priest.
Judas Priest. So we start after following these establishing beautiful mm-hmm. countryside shots. We're at a funeral of some bloke called Declan.
O'Grady.
Declan O'Grady. Strong Irish name. A woman called Brenda White is speaking. It's Dr. Potts from Shortland Street.
Yeah, Amanda Billing, who was the mother of Tilly on Shortland Street and died because she had MS, and then she like was on her way out anyway, and then she kind of like sacrificed herself to do some like research on some like poison.
Remember when everyone in New Zealand knew everything about multiple sclerosis? Oh, because yeah. It was like an ongoing thing on Shortland Street.
Yeah. But this is relevant, so don't cut that out.
Okay, what about the multiple sclerosis?
No, because there are three actors in this episode of Broken Wood who all died on Shortland Street after giving birth to a different character.
That's the circle of life. Yeah. she says that he's a poet and a gentleman.
I know. And this it's is revealed too much for me.
I know. I thought this one would be a bit close to home.
It's just too close to home.
You knowing poets. And they are like this too.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a pitch perfect portrayal of all poets.
So Declan has recorded a video message for his own funeral because he knew he was going to die because he had terminal cancer.
And a massive bandage around his head.
He has a big silly cartoon bandage wrapped around his head.
So that's and how you know it's the brain cancer that's got him.
And he reads his final poem about the sweet smell of death.
The sweet smell of death. Lower the mainsail, lower the flags, lo and behold, I've run aground. I'm holed and I'm sinking. Pour me a Guinness, don't stop me drinking. Pour me a shot, pour me another. Remember me well. Tight to the wind, out on high, riding the horizon, living it up between Mrs. Smith's thighs.
And please remember that Declan's final book, Having a Pint on the Wild Blue Yonder, is for sale in the foyer.
Available in the foyer. Big Boss is here, which I thought was going to be, Police Big Boss is here, which I thought was going to be more of a plot point, but isn't. Mm. He's just a big poetry fan. Mrs. Marlowe starts playing White a Shade of Pale on the organ as everyone processes out.
And Jared's one of the pallbearers.
Which is wild.
And also Gina's there.
Everyone loves poetry in Broken Wood is what we find out. A woman who we find out in a minute to be Jared's auntie, Tina, runs in and is like, "May the Lord be your judge and jury now, you coward."
And she was on Shortland Street, I think that she she got car bombed.
Oh no, I did not see that.
I think that, and she was pregnant to Craig Valentine. I'm pretty sure this is the right actor, but I'm sorry if any more in the know are listening.
Well, you know they are.
I know they are.
We got to be careful what we say about Shortland Street because everyone knows. As the hearse is driving away, it takes a corner a little bit too hard. The back door opens and the casket shoots out onto the road. And there is not Declan O'Grady, a renowned Brokenwood poet inside, but a woman, a dead woman.
Played by J.J. Fong.
Yes. What? Do you have facts about J.J. Fong?
Well, I know her from Flat 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Step Dave.
She does a great American accent later on.
Yeah, she does a really good job, actually.
We hit our title screen. The police have arrived and they're looking at the woman in the casket. She's got a huge wound on her chest.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out Husey is there just to pay respects to one of our great poets, and he calls Breen spleen.
Yeah, that was a good one.
The Undertaker is sure that... that the body was correct when he loaded it in, but he's also immediately seems very useless.
He's so useless. This whole episode, he just doesn't remember anyone or anything.
It's extremely good. And
he forgets to lock the doors all the time.
And the slogan on the side of his hearse is "Where life and death shake hands."
Yeah, it's amazing.
So in the church, Mike has a yarn with Reverend Green. Mike is like, "Why was the casket closed? I thought he was Irish." maybe put a pin in that.
Yeah, weirdly put a pin in that.
This is one of those good episodes where you can kind of put a pin in everything.
Yeah. It's the, not one of our episodes that we don't like where it's just full of red herrings.
No, everything counts. This is where we're formally introduced to Tina Mordehu,
mm-hmm.
Jared's auntie, who hates Declan, and she says that it's kind of poetic justice that Declan was turned into a woman, and a young woman at that.
Yep. Mm. Put a pin in it.
Mm. Poetic justice, appropriate for a poet. we go to the morgue, and it's revealed that the woman has a tattoo that says Scarlet.
Yeah, and immediately I was like, why is it in a Lucida handwriting font?
Oh, you're terrible. Okay, well, we're going to get to that in a bit.
We get to it later.
I can't believe you recognized the font, you absolute nerd. It's just
a normal Microsoft font.
We don't really know what caused the wound because it's quite a funny shape. Mm. But we find out that Declan didn't have an autopsy.
Yeah, because he died of natural causes.
Yeah, which kind of everyone treats as slightly mysterious, even though I think it's quite normal.
Yeah, it's like everyone is just so used to people being murdered. They're like, who did this autopsy? And everyone else is like, no one. Like, you don't do an autopsy if someone dies of cancer. Yeah.
And no one knows who this woman is. Mm. And yeah, so they know basically that she's been dead since Saturday. She's Asian, 25 to 30, and that there are no reports of missing women.
Yeah.
Yes. So we go next we go to Bugle Funeral Home, which is Warren's funeral home. His name's mm-hmm. Warren Bugle. He is playing the funeral march on saxophone really badly.
Mr. Bugle. Mr. Bugle.
So he doesn't hear Mike ring the bell because he's playing the saxophone. And then they ask him, like, how long he's been playing the saxophone. And he says since he was 12.
It's really good. And he says that he's a one-stop shop. They do the music. They do the embalming.
And it's just him. He doesn't have an assistant.
No, it's just him. It's no just wonder him he's like a so frazzled.
Yeah.
He says that Declan was embalmed and then put in the chiller, and then he's like, "Look, I've got it on this work. It's not called a worksheet, is it? You know, where you write down the worksheet you did. Where you proof of work thing? No, that's Bitcoin. fuck."
Oh no, Amelia's gone to Bitcoin.
Oh no. you can now buy our podcast as an NFT.
You can buy a picture of Amelia as an NFT.
It's really expensive though. Which says that Declan wasn't meant to be embalmed. He just got put right in the chiller. And Warren's like, oh yeah. And then it turns out.
Yeah,
he's
like, oh yeah, I didn't embalm that man.
Oh, totally.
God, I just remembered what happens.
What?
I just... No, keep going. I just remembered what happens directly with this.
Oh, okay. So they're like, well, have you buried anyone else recently? And he said, yesterday it was Arthur, or maybe Andrea Broadley. Turns out it was Arthur Broadley, and he was buried in the same coffin, autumn cradle, very fetching. And so they disinter Arthur Broadley.
Yeah.
And so the next scene is Mrs. Marlowe in the cemetery, here to identify the corpse.
And she's in a very good mood about it.
She's making fun of him for getting buried with his ugly toupee.
And he's dug up by our friend's brother, Doug Grant.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch that again.
Yeah.
Can you get a screenshot of that? I just wasn't looking for Doug.
No, so Mrs. Marlowe and Mike come strolling along, and then suddenly Doug Grant, real person, gives them the nod, and they go in the tent.
Holy shit. Well, if you need any goods embroidered, that's what Doug does now.
Mm.
Yeah, go to hit up Doug's and say Broken Wood sent you.
Friend of the pod.
A friend of the pod.
He doesn't know, but
you can have one-way friends.
Oh no.
Warren wants an apology because he's like, I did bury the right person. And Kristen's like, but there's still someone missing, so no. And then Marlo takes the opportunity to start talking shit about Declan.
Yeah.
She says that he's a man of words rather than faces. And we get the first kind of queries about what the poem for you, or rather who the poem for you is about.
Yeah. Recurring motif of this episode.
Mrs. Marlowe really wants to know, but then the woman behind her seems kind of cross at this book signing that we're flashing back to.
Oh, yeah, we're flashing back to a book signing.
And she's like, do you remember me? Make it out to Melody. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know.
I also enjoyed in that scene that Mrs. Marlowe was like, oh, don't write Mrs. Marlowe.
Make it out to Jean Marlowe. As we exit the put a pin in all of this.
The book signing and the melody.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon. Do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely.
As we are leaving the graveyard, we get a little furtive shot of Reverend Green, and he's saying a little prayer in a sinister way.
Yeah.
Okay. We're back in the interrogation room. Warren is there.
Oh,
he
God,
says that
Warren.
He was called to the Wadsworth estate at 11 on Sunday. The times aren't that important.
Yeah, the times aren't that important. I also I don't know who the Wadsworths are.
They're in France.
Yeah. That's all we know about there.
Yeah, they basically are poshos in France, and Brenda White is like their housekeeper.
Yeah.
But she seems to be kind of chummy with everyone in town.
Yeah.
I mean, her and the Wadsworths.
Yeah.
Warren says that he was called there by Barry White, and then goes, oh no, maybe it was Brenda.
Yeah.
Declan left instructions, basically no embalming, closed casket, do it as quick as you possibly can.
Yeah.
As quick as you can. But actually, Warren didn't need the written instructions because Declan had already come and talked to him about it and had given him the idea for the slogan.
Where life and death shake hands.
I'm still coming to terms with it. It's like a place where life and death shake hands.
I like that.
Where life and death shake hands. Yeah, exactly.
As a poet, poets, they just waltz into businesses and just give them these brilliant new slogans.
I don't know why Declan's a gardener and not a professional copywriter. So Warren is gutted because he thinks he has to come up with a new slogan now, because everyone saw the slogan when the body fell out of the purse. And so he says to Kristen,
your death is my business.
Excuse me?
That's catchy.
Yeah.
I quite like that one. Basically, he reckons that he sealed the casket and put Declan in the chiller, and he's definitely certain.
Because he wasn't embalmed and he didn't want things to get a bit whiffy.
No, of course.
His words.
Yes.
Not a poet.
We go back to the whiteboard. Breen recognizes the scarlet font as Lucida Italic.
Mm-hmm. Because
because Roxy has a tattoo. I'm glad that Roxy is back. I feel like she didn't get a message.
She wasn't in season two,
all
really.
Last season. No.
Poor Roxy.
Poor Roxy.
Oh, I don't know if is the rugby episode in season two.
Yes.
Yeah. Then Breen was painting the house because Roxy wanted him to or something.
That's right. Okay.
But that was it for Roxy. But now we know she's got a tattoo in Lucida italic.
Classy.
And
I mean, those stock Microsoft fonts are like, they're big at the moment.
Yeah, and then Kristen's like, where's the tattoo? And then he's like, hey, and she's like, oh, I don't want to know. I also thought it was weird that Scarlett had her own name tattooed on her.
Well, I mean, we haven't found out that it is her name yet.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, I do think it's weird. And they're like, what could it be? Could it be her name, or maybe someone else's name, or maybe she likes the color, which I think is a bad suggestion. Because
that's a bad suggestion.
You don't spell the color with two T's generally.
Yeah. Imagine if I just got like green, like tattooed on my arm.
I mean, neutrals. To be fair, I have a series of quite stupid tattoos, so I can't really talk here. But I do have a tattoo that says aliens exist. So,
what else have you got? George Glass.
I've got that big glass that says George Glass. I don't have that many other ones that are words. I've got two or three different moon tattoos.
Fucking poets.
Mike draws a little casket on the whiteboard.
Oh, that was cute.
To help him think. So we go to Mike's house. He's reading Declan's poetry book. Big Boss rings him up. And Mike's like, please check on the cause of death for me. And Big Boss says, not much mystery, too much Guinness and a brain tumor. And then he says he's off to do hot yoga.
And then Mike says, hot yoga?
Hot yoga. we might have to start speeding this up. I can't spend that much time on hot yoga, but I felt like we needed to mention the hot yoga because I was like, that's the most 2016 thing.
Oh, they mentioned so many hobbies in this episode. Like Mrs. Marlowe's like, oh, me and Arthur did everything together. Tai Chi. Yeah, keep going.
Kristen goes to the Wadsworth estate, but no one will answer the door. And then mysteriously, a bunch of people leave, including Reverend Green on his little bike and someone in a Jaguar. That's not important. I don't think that ever comes up again.
Oh, that must be the doctor.
That must be the doctor, but it's not.
But it never comes up again.
Yeah. We go back to Mike's, and Jared is there. Has Jared always had these cute little earrings?
No, but he had them in the horse episode.
Okay. Jared's got little hoops in, and it's very fetching.
Yeah, it's a great look.
Jared was shoulder tapped to take over Declan's gardening role, and his auntie hooked it up for him, which is weird considering that she hates Declan.
Yeah.
But Jared loves Declan's poetry, especially for you.
For you are the stars, the wind and rain. For me, shelter from the storm of pain. For you, I am yours, and we are one again.
For you. You know it.
It's my favourite.
And Declan told Jared that he wrote it for a special woman who's moved on. And he says it with a tone that implies that she died.
Yeah.
We go back to the station. Kristen's like, why did all this weird stuff happen? She opens the newspaper. The headline is, boo, who is Declan's mystery woman?
And then it has a picture of the corpse.
She's really...
Which is so illegal.
It's bad. It's bad crime. She Kushla shows up basically just to get yelled at.
Yeah. Like, they know it's not on. They all know, like, oh, you can't really post a picture of an unidentified corpse on the front of the newspaper.
Especially with such a terrible headline. Boo! We go back to the morgue. Gina reckons the stab was probably scissors or sharp pliers or maybe cicatrices, something.
Yeah, she's got like a lineup of these things.
Yes, and she's been stabbing a pork.
She's been stabbing a pork, and then Kristen's like okay. And then she's like, Gina's like, Kristen, do you want to have a go at like stabbing the pork? And she's like, no, I'm all good. And then Gina's like, everyone's angry inside.
I thought a lot about that line. Am I angry inside? I don't know.
Yeah, obviously after that I had to think, am I angry inside? I'm kind of angry that people keep emailing me.
Yeah. I feel like all the things I have to be angry about are kind of like old man shakes fist at cloud, you know?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where like you probably do have proper things to be angry about, but that's too much. So all the things that you're actually angry about are like just stupid nothing.
I'm angry that I bought some floppy disks on Trade Me, and it turned out it wasn't from some dude who had floppy disks. It was from some kind of company. And so now they're sending me emails like, oh, there might be delays due to COVID. We'll ship it out within 3 business days. I'm like, I need these fucking floppy disks right now. I need the floppy disks.
This also happened to a friend of the pod who just messaged me. Oh, well, last week she ordered a feng shui frog and then got delivered a baby Buddha fountain instead.
Oh, that is not the same.
But then like emailed the people and they were like, oh, it's a mix up. We won't send you your frog unless you mail the Buddha fountain to the correct recipient.
That's bananas.
I was like, that's definitely illegal too. You can't hold the feng shui frog hostage, but you also can't like send out other clients' addresses and get them to do the returns themselves.
Raz, on Sunday I bought a box of floppy disks and a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones t-shirt.
Yes.
And I think I've hit rock bottom.
Oh, man. I bought a coat that cost a lot of money yesterday.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like that. I tried to buy a bootleg Pokemon t-shirt from the 90s, but it got too expensive.
I've been buying so many things. I've moved up from benefit wage to like just below minimum wage, and so I think that I'm rich now. I've been buying things nonstop. I haven't had this much money in 3 years.
Well, I'm excited to see your like solid gold shoes.
I might even get a new phone. If I win a prize this year, I'm getting a new phone.
If you win a prize, you're buying a mic stand first.
Oh, fuck you.
Okay, we go to St. Judas's Church. Reverend Green confirms that he was the one cycling away from the Wadsworth. He was comforting Brenda, who's been very fragile since Declan died. Yep. He says it's a very big house. One could easily get lost in it.
Yep.
Oh, maybe put a pin in that one. The only people who were there when the casket was there was him, Janelle, and Mrs. Marlowe. Janelle is the local florist,
and
it seems like the casket was never alone.
And she played Carmen on Shortland Street, starting in 1993. And I just forgot what she died of. She started going out with Guy Warner. That's the famous Chris Warner's like evil brother. And then she died, I think, of a brain hemorrhage, but she was the mother of Tuesday Warner. Hang on, I'm gonna look that up. Carmen arrived as a new nurse, but when her addiction to prescription pills came to light, she was fired. She returned months later, completely rehabilitated, but director of nursing, Paul,
fantastic,
revealed she was formerly a prostitute and was at odds with the clinic staff. When Carmen innocently claimed a dead patient's lottery ticket, she discovered she had won thousands of dollars and guiltily spent a lot of it.
That doesn't sound that innocent.
Before she started to date Guy Warner, Carmen discovered she was pregnant and in October gave birth to Tuesday Warner amidst a massive storm. In December, a truck plowed through the clinic reception and Carmen received what appeared to be minor bruising. However, later Carmen collapsed and died, having developed a brain hemorrhage. Carmen was very popular amongst the public and was openly mourned upon her death. In 2012, Carmen's death was voted by fans as one of the show's most iconic moments.
I think one of us needs to write an essay about intertextuality between Brokenwood.
Oh, that's great. She died on, it's a Christmas cliffhanger in 1995.
Okay. There is some kind of speculation that For You was actually about Denise Snodgrass.
A very minor character.
Very minor character. And while we're talking to Reverend Green, the camera focuses briefly on a pair of
cicateers.
Green asks Mike about the body, and he said, "I've heard that she was Asian." I didn't know what to make of until much later in the episode, and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. Especially, like, just after the Shark Fin episode.
Oh, God. And so we find out that the coroner was not notified because of the natural causes, yes, of course, but the death certificate was signed off by someone called Dr. Plummer.
Mm-hmm.
We get another vaguely sinister shot of Reverend Green,
and he's on the phone. Oh, yeah, because he's got some secateurs.
He's on the phone to someone called Roger, and he's in distress, and he says, it was her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mike has some questions for Jared's auntie. We get a beautiful scene in the car.
For you, the devil departed. For me, the Red Sea parted. For you, I rise to the occasion, riding you with self-flagellation. Swallow me whole, I'm wholly yours. Way too many mixed metaphors.
I always liked poetry.
You know country music doesn't count, right?
Oh, come on. Three chords and the truth. It's got to be poetry.
Three chords and the truth, baby.
The person's like, no, it's not.
It's definitely not. Basically, they kind of just talk about Declan and how he went to Thailand to get some surgery, but it didn't really work. But he was still doing the gardening stuff with Jared afterwards because he was determined to make the most of, you know, the time that he had left. Mike is like, why were you at the funeral so early? And she just said that she likes to get a good seat.
Great line.
And then she reckons that Declan is burning in hell.
Nice.
We get a very odd whiteboard scene where they're still trying to track down trying to track down who the woman is with the scarlet tattoo. And Breen is like, he's asked all of the Asian restaurants, and then he thought maybe she was in town for the karaoke festival.
Yeah.
I thought we could have done without that scene for a number of reasons, personally.
Yeah. They just keep being like, she must have come from somewhere. We'll check international arrivals. What?
I think the logic behind that is because no one's put out a missing person in New Zealand.
Right.
But it's still a little bit flopping.
Like, how many people in Auckland are Asian? It's like 30% or something.
It's a lot. It's not unusual.
It's not unusual.
People from
it's
all
hundreds
parts
of thousands
the world.
Of people.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Back at the Wadsworth estate, we're talking to Brenda White. She likes knitting. She's knitting some baby stuff, allegedly for her sister. Who's pregnant with twins. She talks about how the Wadsworths are in France. She's the housekeeper. And the morning that Declan died, Janelle, the flower woman, who apparently was also mates with them and is just here, was the first person on the scene.
Yeah.
Just after 10, Janelle told Brenda to call an ambulance. The doctor is there, but he kind of just, like, leaves.
Mm.
Janelle says that Brenda can't go in to look at the body. And then basically Warren shows up and sorts it all out. Brenda says that she was cleaning 6 wine glasses.
Yeah.
But won't
yeah,
say
ask
why.
Her what she was cleaning and she said 6 wine glasses and she didn't go into the cottage to see Declan's body because his eyes were still open.
Yeah. And it's like, She won't say why there were 6 wine glasses. She was like, oh, it's whatever.
Oh, they've just got lots of friends.
Yeah. And they love it to be clean. It's like, well, they're in France. They don't know. Plummer had been staying overnight and Janelle was just there to collect exotic flowers.
Yeah, because she's a florist.
Cut to Peacock Flowers, Janelle's florist. And at this point, things should be starting to fall into place.
Or, you know, or are they not falling into place?
Well, I think, no, I mean in terms of what maybe the theme of this episode is. Because we've got Brenda White, Reverend Green.
Oh, right.
Dr. Plummer. And now we've got Miss Peacock.
Which is all just no surprise to me because in the last episode, I think, oh, was it the last episode? I don't know, like the last episode where we had St. Judas, I was like, oh, Reverend Green, like Cluedo.
Well, they did it. They
they got there too.
They got there as well. Janelle is on the phone to a courier who she's mad at. She says, it's not like I'm asking them to pick up some bizarre rancid cheese.
No, she's not on the, no, she's on the phone like hissing and then Mike says, oh, that must be the courier. And she's like, ah, oh, yeah. Couriers, am I right? She's obviously not talking to a courier. He just gave her that.
Oh, damn. I just gave her that, didn't I?
Yeah, you gave it to her too.
Oh, I fell for Peacock's performance. Mike is interested in how the body got moved from the garden.
Yeah.
Did Janelle do it? Because Brenda definitely didn't do it. And the doctor, she says that the doctor didn't do it. She reckons it was the ambulance drivers.
Yeah. There's a lot of suspension of disbelief involved in this, that one person could move a dead body.
It's all extremely fishy kind of right from the get-go. She also has a dog called Moutard.
Yeah.
More whiteboard stuff. We found out who the woman is. Her name's Scarlett Ming. She is American. She is. She came from San Francisco. She has a boutique shop called Missy Scarlett's.
Yeah. In San Francisco.
On her arrival card, the address that she put down was the Wadsworth House.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's all adding up now.
They realize that it's not just Dr. Plummer, it's Professor Plummer. And
they're very skeptical about that.
They are. They're like, what kind of doctor teaches? Ugh.
It must be so bad.
And they find out that they're all Cluedo characters.
Yeah.
Because Moutard is French for mustard.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I did, so I was just like, why is the dog called Mustard?
He's a yellow dog.
Who calls their dog the French word for mustard?
I don't know. She might be cultured, you know. Not everyone's like us. What would you call your dog?
I mean, I can't be trusted to name anything. My lizard's called Lizard.
True. And my cat's called Piggy, so.
Yeah. I feel strange about naming an animal. I don't feel like I really have the right. It probably has its own name.
But what if the dog, pretend the dog asked you to?
Oh, it depends on its face.
Okay. Well,
I'll give it a proper name, that's for sure.
Like Brandon.
Oh, he sounds like a dickhead. Yeah, you've got to give it a first and last name as well.
Brandon Michigan.
Brandon Spears.
Okay.
Something like that. Judas Brandon Thaddeus. Michigan is a great name, though.
You can use that in your future fiction if you like.
How about Robbie Lazenby, the black Labrador?
I would get a poodle and call it...
Imagine you with a poodle!
Jean-Luc Lefebvre. Oh my God. I think that would be good.
There's Amelia on the streets of Point Ship with a poodle called Jean-Luc. Oh, it would be over for you hoes.
What about a Chinese crested called Cynthia Prentice?
Ooh. Sounds a little like Suzanne Prentice.
Yeah, like Suzanne Prentice. Or maybe a labradoodle called Petula Clark.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Okay. Petula Green, Clark too.
Yeah.
Junior. Green arrives kind of basically right on cue to tell them all about the Cluedo thing.
Yeah.
Which they never say Cluedo. They call it a timeless classic and most rewarding board game. So he says it's a role-playing whodunit. We all know it's slapping. The murderer has to move the weapon and the victim to the room that they get on their cards, and then everyone has to kind of like figure it out.
To be honest, I did not understand how the game worked.
So what happens, Raz, is that everyone is given a set of cards.
Yeah.
You get a card that has a murder weapon.
Yeah.
You get a card that has a victim, and you get a card that has a room.
Yeah.
And then you get an additional card, and most of those cards are blank, but one of them says murderer.
Yeah.
And so basically the murderer has to get the person and the object that they have cards of into the room that they have a card of. And everyone else has to visit every room at least once. And they're kind of meant to be like moving stuff around to like...
That was the bit that threw me, was the moving the weapon around that everyone was doing.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think I don't exactly know how that would make sense, because once you found the body, surely it's just whoever is the first person to go into the body room next, right?
Yeah. But then that's kind of not how it works, because they all meet at midnight.
Anyway, the last game was on Saturday. Declan called himself Colonel Moutarde for it. The previous Scarlet was Snodgrass, but she left because she was in love with Moutarde and it was not reciprocated or whatever. Somehow they meet Scarlet Ming online and she seems cool and very into it. And so she...
They Skype her.
Yeah. And she comes to New Zealand.
Yeah.
To do it.
Yeah.
Green thought the game was kind of sucky on Saturday because Plummer was just like working.
Yeah.
And Declan was basically just hitting on Scarlet the whole time.
Yeah. And Thing White was doing her knitting.
Yeah. So I don't really. Yeah.
Imagine if you came from San Francisco to Brokenwood to play this game and everyone's kind of like, oh, I'm not really into it tonight.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just knitting.
It would be so, like, how, it's like a 15-hour flight.
Especially because she was like staying at their house and stuff. Yeah. You'd think it would be like, yeah, oh. Basically, she disappears at the end of the night when they all get together. She's just not there. And there's a note that is like, hope you had a fun night. Oh, bye. Sorry. Too much jet lag.
Yeah.
And they're all like, I guess you just went back to San Francisco in the middle of the night.
Yeah, which is just, it's so sketchy.
Extremely sketchy. We find out, we have another whiteboard scene where we just basically go over all of this stuff.
Yeah,
but we do find out that Kristen is watching a box set of Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Because she makes fun of them for playing this game on Saturday nights, and they're like, what did you get up to? And she's like, oh, well, I'm just watching my Downton Abbey.
I thought that was quite rude of Bryn, because he definitely knows that Kristen is like a lonely, lonely woman.
Yeah. Sad. Yeah, I kind of forgot that Scarlet was staying at the Wadsworth place.
Yeah. But there's not any rooms for her to have. I guess we'll find that out later.
Didn't she like have any stuff?
The bloody, like, rando policeman now does a little microaggression and says to Mike, oh, these people are here to see you. Where usually, every other instance, they say the specific person who it is.
Yeah, like, every other instance, they're like, Senior, Sebastian here for you.
Senior, Reverend Green is here. Oh, yeah. Oh, Breen, bloody, what's that fucking germo man's name?
Yeah, I already can't remember. Andreas, I don't know.
Hans Ziegler is here. Oh, yeah,
I forgot it was like unrealistically German.
And these people, and this guy, this policeman is just like, oh, these people are here. And it turns out to be Jared and his auntie.
Offensive.
Tina is basically like, I know who For You was about. It was about Jared's mum, Mirjana, and I think that Declan is Jared's dad.
My dad.
Yeah.
And then we find out that Jared's mum died in childbirth, and he never knew his dad. And so he is an orphan, which is something that we didn't know about.
Something that we had never heard before, that Jared was an orphan. And so also, like, how did she die in childbirth? She was, like, 16.
Yeah, and it was, like, it must have been, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it just happens sometimes, you know? I guess if her family were really religious, maybe they, you know, did something weird.
What, they did, like, an exorcism?
Yeah. Tina has taken hair from both Declan and Jared.
Yeah.
She manages to, like, pull out a clump.
Yeah, she, like, plucks a clump of each of them. Like, she doesn't just find some on their clothes or whatever.
Yeah. And has sent it in for a DNA test. We also find out that Tina had previously had a thing with Declan.
Yeah.
And this was when he first came to town, and he was like, did she say he's 19?
He wasn't. He was, we find out later, you paused on the court documents, that he was 28 when he had to leave the other town.
Oh, so she was 19 and her little sister was 16. That makes sense. Oh, no, I didn't pause on the later court documents.
Yeah.
But we do need to get to that because it's quite horrific.
Yeah.
So we finally go to Plummer's surgery, and he is explaining with a model of, like, a brain to
I would Kristen love to have a job like that.
How the cancer affected the hippocampus, but actually it was kind of fine. He seemed to be functioning normally. Hence the popularity of the lobotomy, until we found out it was actually bad.
Yeah, and then Kristen's like, what's a life without emotion? Which is a weird for her.
Fair. And he keeps saying, apparently.
Yeah.
And she's like, why do you keep saying apparently? And he's like, well, I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah, and she's like, what?
He's like, I'm a psychiatrist, which she must have... There's no way you can go to his, like, medical, his practice.
And think that it's a GP.
Anyway, he was not Declan's doctor. He's just a psychiatrist. And he definitely didn't sign the death certificate, because why would he? He's not a doctor.
Yeah.
Breen goes to the hospital and bribes one of the staff members with a margarita down at the Frog and Cheetah.
The next time I see you down at the Frog and Cheetah, your first margarita's on me.
And what will Roxy think of that?
She'll be with me, and probably already onto her third.
I mean, true.
How does I don't know how the doctor knew Breen.
I think it's just, you know, it's just one of those cheeky things.
Was in an earlier episode.
But he's basically looking for Declan's
She was in the medical first history.
He wants to find out.
He wants to find out how long Declan had been enrolled in this particular district health board.
Yes, and if possible, who his oncologist or GP was.
Yeah,
we go back to the interrogation room with Professor Plummer. The death certificate is produced, and he's like, yeah, that is my signature, but I didn't sign that.
Yeah.
And he also says that when he left, contrary to Brenda's report, Declan was still alive. He also says that she was washing cutlery.
Yeah.
Not glasses. Put a pin in that.
Mm.
Cutlery. Anything made by a cutler. You know, anything with a sharp edge is made by a cutler and technically counts as cutlery. We're getting in on a technicality with this one.
Oh, he didn't have to be right.
He didn't, but he is.
Yeah.
Breen rings them up and is like, Declan was never at the hospital. He's not in the health records.
He's not enrolled.
He has no GP.
He has no GP and he's not enrolled in any district health board.
No. He's a mystery
man.
Which
is wild.
Really says something about the state of men's health, though, doesn't it?
Yes. Sad state of affairs. Like, and that's also like a storyline that I guess couldn't happen anymore.
Oh, yes, because of the vaccine.
Yeah.
Although he could just be unvaccinated.
Yeah, he could be unvaccinated, but other than that, he would need to be enrolled in a district health.
And he wouldn't show up on the statistics because they do it based on enrollments. Shit.
Really? If he got COVID, it would just be other.
It would just be other. Plummer reveals that he's been doing psych work with Declan because he's a fan, which seems hugely unethical.
Yeah. Maybe you could get some of your DJ fans to get...
Oh my God, Amelia. Oh, I love Word Salad. I listen to it every Wednesday morning. Oh, true. Can I tell you about the time my dad was mean to me? Seems cheap.
Cheap.
Affordable.
Queen.
Affordable therapy. Plummer says that he wasn't in the mood for Cluedo. He just took the pistol from the study to the library and got a book. The book is not really important, but it does come up a couple more times.
Yeah, don't put a pin in that one.
Okay, back to the whiteboard again. Turns out, not only is
Declan... Oh, and he says that he won't say any more without his lawyer.
Yes. I like the lawyer.
We'll
get to that. Not only did Declan never see the doctor ever... Men's health. Men, it's not a shameful thing to seek medical help. There's nothing too small, you know?
What does that mean?
Little PSA there.
There's nothing too small. Men's health.
Men's health. There's nothing too small. Not only was he not enrolled in a GP, he didn't have a passport. So he definitely never went to Thailand.
Yeah.
It also turns out that when the ambulance showed up, the Reverend Green told it to go away because the doctor had already been and gone.
Yeah.
And they all collectively realize that Declan's not dead. He faked his own death.
Yeah, they all say it together at the same time, which is great.
Yeah, because he never had cancer.
He never had cancer. He never went to Thailand. No one ever collected the body.
Yeah.
We dug up Arthur for no reason.
Poor Arthur. It's okay. Arthur had no friends or family apart from Mrs.
Muller.
And he
had a big nose and an ugly toupee. Mrs. Muller, quote, 2016.
They are trying to find a clue in the final poem. The poem says that he'll be resting between Mrs. Smith's thighs. So
yeah, sure does.
Breen is sent to try and find Mrs. Smith.
Yeah. And he's like, finding an Asian woman is fine, but finding someone called Mrs. Smith.
Oh, yeah. He didn't even have a name for the other person.
Yeah.
They also are wondering, who wrote the note then for Scarlet?
Mm.
And why would it say, hope the game goes well, if she was the murderer, as everyone had suggested?
Yeah, because then the game wouldn't go well because she just ruined it by going back to San Francisco in the middle of it.
Okay, so the lawyer for Plummer arrives. Her name's Miss Temple, and she gets a spooky music cue.
Yep.
And, like, does, like, a looming jump scare appearance behind Kristen.
And she's played by Laura Hill, who was Tony Thompson, later Tony Warner, on Shortland Street. And she's the mother of Harry Warner. Yeah.
Please tell me this is not your penis.
Yeah, from the famous meme, Harry Warner, please tell me this is not your penis. And she died of kidney failure.
Oh, big rip.
Big, big rip.
And I'm glad they could all get back together here, the extended Warner family.
Yeah, finally all back together.
In the interrogation room, it turns out that Plummer didn't see Scarlet in the manor after the game, even though he was staying there. He left the next morning at 9:45, so before Declan was meant to have collapsed.
Yeah.
Which all lines up, and he couldn't have been there at 10 because he had an appointment in town with this very lawyer because his wife is trying to divorce him.
Yeah. And they were like, a lawyer's appointment on a Sunday morning? And they were like, well, yeah, well, that's the only time you can meet.
Yeah, which I had a lot of sympathy for, you know. They're all busy people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally trying not to do work in the weekends anymore. But I'm no lawyer, Tim Paul.
All right. Back in the driver's seat. We go back to Wadsworth. Mike is interrogating Brenda. Why did Plummer stay over on Saturday night? And she basically says, like, oh, it takes all sorts to make a world. I don't judge. Nothing to do with me.
Oh, I thought that she said because he lives in Riverstone.
She does after another prompting. But at first she's like, at first she's like, oh, it's not. I'm not.
None of my business.
That. None of my business.
A lot of rooms in the house. Anything could be going on.
She says she was just knitting all night in the ballroom, but no one came to the ballroom.
Yeah, even though everyone needs to go in each room once.
Yeah. The game doesn't really make sense. I guess the game could make sense, but no one is playing the game properly. Because
they've had a big week.
Mike has a look around her room, and she has a Vanuatu and New Caledonia travel book.
From Lonely Planet.
As well as some vitamins.
Yeah, some vitamins.
Yeah. Hmm.
And then he asks her about the Lonely Planet, and she's like, oh, yeah, for my sister. She's, got the travel bug.
She's pregnant with twins, and she's going to New Caledonia.
And Vanuatu.
It turns out it was her who found the note. Yada, yada, yada. We find out that that the Reverend was in Plummer's room. And he also stayed over.
What were they doing in there?
I don't know. No one discusses it until a couple of scenes in the future. Also, Jared's DNA letter has arrived, but he doesn't want to open it. And then
he's really sad about it, actually.
He is really sad. There's some great character work for Jared in this episode. And then also, Kristen is like, oh, Mike. I just remembered that when Warren said that he put the body in the chiller, the phone immediately rang.
Yep.
Maybe that was on purpose, and that's how the bodies got switched.
Yeah.
So we go to Bugle's funeral parlor. Everything again is just unlocked.
Yeah. Kristen just goes in.
Yeah. And, like, even the chiller, like, everything is totally unlocked. And then Warren arrives and he's like, oh, sorry, oh, how'd you get in here? And she's like, it's just unlocked. You're such a fucking idiot, Warren. And then he says that the call that happened when he was putting in the body in the chiller was a woman saying her husband had died. And then he was like, but I couldn't find the address that she gave me. I was just driving around for hours, and I guess one of my competitors must have ended up taking it, because I never heard about that again.
As if this is a thing that happens, that when somebody dies, like, you call, like, all these competing funeral homes, then whoever gets the body first, like, gets the business.
Well, he does make it seem that way, because he's bought a special GPS now.
Yeah.
So that he's never going to get lost again. Which is weird, because in 2016, I think we all had that on our phones.
No. Oh, yeah, 2016. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is pre your camera phone. It takes all sorts to make the world go around.
This is post the camera phone. Okay. Because this is November 2016.
Oh, okay, yeah. You're right.
Yeah. I've moved on.
What next?
He reveals that the death certificate wasn't actually brought by the doctor, but instead the florist brought it to save the doctor a trip. So Janelle Peacock brought the death certificate.
Great.
Mike has gone to the church and was like, oh, did you do the 8 a.m. service last Sunday? And Reverend Green is like, oh, nah.
He's like, well, then I did the midday one and I did the evening one, so.
And the evening one's the good one, where they get the youth band to play the songs on guitar.
He doesn't say that.
He doesn't say that, but in my experience. it turns out that Green is having an affair with Plummer.
Yeah.
He's gay.
He's gay. And then he looks all around the church and says, I'm going to miss this place.
I think, is he meant to be Anglican?
I don't know. He's Church of Brokenwood.
So I guess he's allowed to be gay. He just says the church is like more forward thinking, but maybe not about this. He could be presbo.
Yeah, I guess he's, I thought that he was, you know, Presbyterian or Anglican.
Yeah. I think it's okay to be gay, but I don't think it's okay to have an affair with someone like who's married.
Oh, it's not a good look.
No. Bad look. Save yourself till marriage, reverend.
Yeah, and dirty, then they like then it goes, this is when it goes back to the station, right?
Well, we also find out that Janelle asked him to tell the ambulance people to bugger off.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is where we go back to the whiteboard and where Breen says, and I'm going to cut this in.
Yay.
Gay rights.
He says, oh, I mean, you're going to cut it in anyway, but you know, he says something to do with like, oh, but between a reverend and a psychiatrist, you think they'd be able to get some kind of gay rights going?
The only bit I'm cutting in is him saying gay rights. So aww. I'm glad that you gave the full quote for us.
Gay rights. Gay rights.
Then what?
Breen says that there's 94 Smiths in the hinterland of Brokenwood. And this is where we find out horrible, horrible things about Declan, whose real name is Tom Romanski.
Yeah.
And this is... And Mike says something about Putin here?
Yep. I got a screenshot of that.
And it turns out that he changed his name and ran away to Brokenwood.
From Southland,
because he was being charged with unlawful sex with a minor.
Yeah. Melody.
Which is real bad.
And she was 14 and he was 28.
I thought 14 was the age of consent in New Zealand.
It's 16.
Okay.
What? 14?
Well, I didn't want to Google it. I thought it would put me on a list.
No, it's definitely 16.
Okay. 14's too young.
14 is very young.
Especially when he was what?
28. Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we don't have to linger on that for very long in the episode. Jesus. It's kind of just introduced as like a kind of like, fuck this guy. Because it's like, well, if you were feeling sympathetic for this guy as maybe just being a poet who faked his own death.
Yeah, maybe
not. He actually sucks shit.
Yeah. And he's Polish.
And he's bad man. And he's Polish.
And his name is essentially Roman Polanski.
His name is basically Roman Polanski. Declan made the film Rosemary's Baby. We go back to Mike's house. Jared's there feeling philosophical about his DNA letter. He says the word envelope rather than envelope.
Oh, I say envelope.
Oh, okay. Some of us are cultured.
Do you say auction?
Auction?
Yeah.
How you mean to say it?
Yeah, like I say it like that, but some people say auction.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it's
I thought you were
so going to
say auction.
Okay. I went to an auction last weekend.
Jared spills some wine on the rug and Mike has a realization. And then Jared has a realization. This scene is very silly.
Yeah.
Basically, Mike spills this wine and then looks at the wine and is like, holy shit, I figured it out. And then he looks up and Jared's like, holy shit, I figured it out. Mrs. Smith is not a woman. It's a boat.
Yeah.
So being in between
Mrs. Smith's...
It's a 40-foot
launch down the pier or something, he says.
Yeah, he's seen it.
When he was in his dinghy.
Yeah, at Sandspit. So we go down to the mooring. Jared rows up to the boat to check it out, which seems dangerous, I think, now that like they know some shit about this dude.
It's not a good part of a murder investigation to get a random guy to like just go check out where the person might be hiding.
No.
But as we know, Mike won't go on a boat.
Yeah, Mike will never go on a boat. He shan't do it. So he sent his surrogate child, Jared. So that makes the thing about that we read on Jared's profile about him being like Mike's son kind of more poignant.
Mm.
If Jared is an orphan. No wonder he does all this crazy shit for Mike without really asking any questions.
It's so weird that it never came up before.
I mean, maybe they talked about it off screen.
No, but Mike doesn't know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Mike doesn't know anything about it. Surely one of the first things that he asks him is like, so are you from Brokenwood? Did you grow up here?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, because he's met his Uncle Walter.
Fuck, I hope Walter comes back.
Now what's happening?
Janelle is at the wharf, allegedly taking Moutard for a walk because it's his very favourite place. She says that actually she fainted, so she doesn't know who moved Declan, even though before she said it was her and the ambulance people. Now she's like, I don't know. There's a camera thing that implies someone is watching everyone.
True.
And Jared is like,
yeah, no sign of life. Maybe the Mrs. Smith in the poem is actually a hot lady after all.
Yeah, he says hot lady.
Mike goes to the rug shop.
Yeah, Mike goes to Brokenwood's Persian rug store, which has a large map of the Gulf States on the floor.
Do you reckon that this is that Persian rug shop that's in Newmarket? Because I can't think of anywhere else they
could find. Just, they set it up.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you reckon they put that map? That makes it so weird that there's the map of the Gulf States.
Yeah, it's really weird. But it's definitely, because the shop is definitely in the same row as the like Peacock's florist.
Oh, true. So it can't be a new market. Okay. Mike is like, oh, this rug. And they're like, yeah, it's so good. It's so good. It's real expensive. But that's, you know, you get what you pay for. And yeah. Mike's like, when did you last sell one of these? And he's like, well, we don't sell them that often. But truth be told, we sold one on Sunday.
Yeah. And then he's like, special price for you, my friend. And Mike's like, oh, I've got to go measure my space.
I can't believe Mike didn't take the special rug price.
I wish like, he did. He does do that sometimes.
Especially because he genuinely needs a new rug.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking do it, Mike.
At least he can get the stains cleaned out of his.
I think he's just a cheapo. I think he's going to try to get one from the dump shop.
Classic Mike.
We go back to the whiteboard. It turns out that the cancer charity that all of the book proceeds, the poetry book proceeds were going to, is actually a limited liability company in Vanuatu.
And it's just wild to try and make money out of selling a poetry book.
That's what I thought. I'm like, it's not...
Do you know how much money...
He did like a telethon or anything for this charity.
Do you know how much money the average poetry book would make in royalties in New Zealand?
I would say negative money.
In royalties, like $900.
Oh.
But other than that, generally negative money.
But like taking into account what you have to spend to make poetry, you know.
Your soul.
Blood, that's what, $400. Sweat.
$400 worth of
blood. $200.
You gotta like annoy everyone.
Tears, $500 to $600, depending.
The emotional labor of everyone you've ever met.
Oh, being vaguely insufferable.
I have to decline to comment on this.
Feeling everything that little bit more deeply.
Oh my god!
Extra therapy. It all adds up, and it all costs more than $900.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
You know what, Raz? I'm going to take this opportunity to say that I've got a lot of respect for poets. And as a country music fan, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that I love what they do.
Yeah.
So no hard feelings when I said that poets are kind of insufferable. Okay. I was just doing it for a gag.
You're just doing it for the non-poet listeners.
Do we have any non-poet listeners?
I only know us to have three poet listeners.
Keep rhyming those stanzas, poets. You know?
My god, they're not going to like that.
Or keep scanching.
Keep ordering. I don't know. Let's move on.
It turns out that he didn't... I mean, I'm a poet, kind of. He didn't switch off the camera.
How are you a poet?
I think anyone who writes is kind of a poet. He didn't switch off the camera.
Copywriting.
At the end of...
Yeah.
I write other things.
Okay.
Songwriting is a lot like poetry. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I forgot about songwriting. I thought you meant that play wrote about the eel. So he didn't turn the camera off himself.
He didn't turn the camera off himself. Someone else turned off the camera. And apparently the footage was entirely unedited or whatever. Mm.
Because it wasn't digital.
Wasn't it?
No, it like went grey and fuzzy at the end.
Oh, true. I guess it was a video. So someone else was there filming him, and you can see that it's actually, there's a reflection of Peacock's pendant.
Gross.
Uh-huh. We get a quick shot of Jared scoping out the boat, and then, oh, we're bloody up to the denouement pretty much.
Oh, thank God.
Kristen has everyone gathered together at Wadsworth. In a kind of old school murder mystery style. It turns out that the book that Plummer got from the library was Jung.
And I missed that.
And he says, it's not my fault I find solace in Jung when I'm stressed.
And also him and the Reverend are bad at playing gay.
They're not that gay.
They're not that gay. They're like, oh, honey, shut up. Patting each other's hands and wearing like stupid college shirts. Not what being gay is all about.
I mean, it is a little bit about that.
No, it's not.
Green is bloody loving the like murder mystery run through. Yeah. He's living for it.
Yeah.
White left her sewing scissors in the ballroom, Kristen says, and she's like, oh, yeah, I wondered where those had gone. Brenda reckons that Reverend Green saw her with Declan in the billiards room, but he doesn't remember that at all. We get a cutaway. Jared's gone off to get a sandwich and a Coke, but the boat's gone.
Oh, no, he's eating back. No, you know what he's eating? He's eating a square pie and drinking a Phoenix Cola.
Oh.
Because then later Mike is also eating a pie. I was very hung up on the idea that Jared had bought himself a Phoenix organic cola.
I mean, they are delicious.
Yeah, they're like $5.50 as well.
True. But I mean, he seems to do a lot of work.
Yeah.
I think being head vintner can't have too shabby a salary.
Yeah, I mean, head vintner, the gardening work at the Wadsworth Estate and
yeah,
the,
for poshos.
The horse.
The horse stuff.
The horse.
Odd jobs for his auntie. Maybe his auntie bought it
his,
for him.
His, like, secret arms trade.
So, back the at Wadsworth.
Acting is, of course, unpaid.
Oh, strictly amateur, but dedicated. Kristen says that Janelle came across Declan flirting with Scarlett and she was mad, so she lured Scarlett into the ballroom and stabbed her and then rolled her up in a carpet. And it had to have been Janelle because Janelle's the only person who knew Declan's plan to fake his own death.
And she had the motive that she was in love with him. And then she says, but everyone was in love with Declan.
Which I think they could have played more into.
Yeah, they absolutely could have.
Because everyone there.
Especially with Snodgrass as well.
And everyone there is attracted to men.
To the boys, yeah. They could have whacked it in more.
I think they could have whacked it in more. But I don't think there's any indication that Plummer or Green were particularly into Declan.
No.
He seems a bit of a scuzzbag as well.
Yeah. I don't know why everyone was into him.
He's a poet. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. Winter kept us warm, covering earth and forgetful snow. You know? Poetry. I just wanted to give a little shout out to poets.
Okay.
Because I feel like they get, you know, they get a raw deal.
What, from you, like 5 minutes ago?
I can't remember that. I don't think that happened.
No, you're going to cut it out. I know you are. The podcast is going to be edited down to just be like 10 minutes of Amelia talking up poets. But they talk themselves up enough for everyone.
You know, they share a kind of a lineage with the bards of old. You know, who can blame them?
They're always going on a bloody kind picnic.
A mystic tradition. You know, it's like, you know, Homer.
Just a bunch of Homers.
Rosy-fingered Dawn. Janelle admits to faking the death with Declan, but she says that she definitely didn't do the murder. I didn't do the murder.
I did the other stuff. I didn't do the murder.
Jared rings up and says that the boat's sailing away. Yep. Mike is like, no, I'm not
Mike's
interested.
Like, well, I'm off down the station to process Janelle.
Which he does do.
Mm.
Well, they really aren't salubrious, are they?
Mike leaves her in the cell and drives off to get a pie.
Mm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Breen and Kristen are in the cool speedboat chasing the sail ship.
Yeah, they've also had time to pop on some police raincoats.
It's very good. It's very good. Boat chase. Jared calls up Mike and says that he looked at the DNA test, and then Mike says, oh, mate, we'll talk about it later. And Jared burns the DNA test.
Yeah, a great shot.
Kristen arrives at the boat, but no one's on the boat.
Yeah.
They look between the tiller's been tied up.
The thighs of Mrs. Smith, and there's no one there.
A song plays that talks about the sad love of a girl, and we see Declan come to shore in a little inflatable dinghy, and he meets Brenda White.
And they're both wearing Kathmandu jackets.
Well, I mean, you know, they get into the car and they're like, haha, we fooled them all. We're going to run away. And then Mike gets in the back.
It's so funny. This is the best shot of this episode and of many episodes, as them being like, haha, and then just Mike just sliding into the back seat of their car.
It's so good. This episode's such a banger.
Yeah.
So basically, White is pregnant. Kristen was in on this and was fooling everyone by making it seem like the police thought Janelle had done the murder. Declan, however, has never been aware of the murder and is pretty shocked to find out that his girlfriend killed a woman.
Yeah. But then in turn, Brenda White is pretty shocked to find out that Declan's actually called Tom
Polanski.
He
had unlawful sex with a minor.
Yeah.
It turns out that the cutlery that she was washing in the sink was her expensive sewing scissors.
Mm-hmm. That she couldn't resist throwing away.
Yeah, because they're like a couple $100, I think.
Yeah. But she also murdered someone with them. And they're going to make so much money from the poetry book.
And the thing about them is you can't really drop them or they get unaligned.
Yeah.
She does drop them in the sink with a big clang, which is a plot. Is one of the ways that Mike knew what it was, because he was like, Janelle heard a clang. He also says that if your sister was pregnant, she wouldn't want to be going on a world travel.
And why did you have the vitamins?
But isn't she going on a world? I guess she's got more kind of extenuating circumstances. Mm. And that's it.
A lot going on.
A lot going on, but I had a fantastic time, you know?
Yeah, I was shocked at so many turns. It reminded me of the later episodes.
Me too. I just love it when it's like everything is important to the mystery, and it's not just like everything is a red herring and then it's something that you couldn't possibly have worked out.
Yeah.
Good shit. Okay, well, I guess it's time for Brokenwood Logs On.
Brokenwood Logs On.
I told Raz that we were going to do one, and now I've changed my mind, and we're going to do a different one.
What? I was really looking forward to it.
Okay.
What other one were you going to do?
I was going to do In My Beauty Bag.
Yeah, that's what I wanted.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we are doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant you changed your mind again.
I am extremely mercurial.
Okay. Just like the song My Bachelorette.
I just like to throw my will around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my will.
Freedom of speech.
Freedom. I like to exercise my freedom of speech. And my freedom of speech today is reading out the Stuff article in my beauty bag.
Yes.
In my beauty bag. In my beauty bag, the Broken Wood Mysteries, Fern Sutherland.
Yay.
Kiwi TV show The Broken Wood Mysteries is a hit overseas as well as at home. We caught up with lead actress Fern Sutherland for her beauty tips.
Why does this never happen to me?
I think I would be very embarrassed if they asked me about this. But I guess
you
it makes
don't have
it
a skincare routine.
Not really. I just wash it with fresh water. I have quite sensitive skin.
Amazing. But I mean, like, this is like, for me, I'm like always in a like, what are you reading thing. And the truth is I'm not reading anything.
You're just constantly doing skincare.
I feel like I do more skincare. No, I don't know. I do more skincare than reading. But it's like very stressful having to do these like, what am I reading things. And you're either not reading anything or you're reading like a really horrible book.
Yeah, I read this because my friend said it was terrible and I wanted to see
we
if they
wanted
were
to
right.
Like laugh about it together.
Yeah.
I'm reading this book by this like local like inspirational person and I think it sucks. No,
that is really the problem about having strong opinions about things, is that sometimes
I mean, I would love to be one of the, well, I not really, but at times I would love to be one of those people that's like, I'm reading the most lovely book. It's a balm for my soul. But I'm always just fucking hate reading something.
If they did a book of My Beauty Bag, I'd read that.
Well, like,
I think
also,
I do spend more money on books than on skincare, though.
Oh, more money. Yeah, I spend more money on books.
But do you want to hear about all my Fern's skincare routine?
Oh, absolutely.
First, to get rid of makeup, I use Cetaphil or an oil cleanser on my face. I actually do have Cetaphil.
Yes, started off very, very relatable.
Extremely relatable. This Kiwi brand, Taylor, does a great one. And Antipodes do a grapeseed version, which is good as well. Oh, I thought I was just going to say good as.
See, this is another
fucking
thing where, like,
you
get asked by stuff to like talk about your skincare routine, and then you just have to say all these like New Zealand products.
I've never heard of Taylor. I'm gonna look into that. But no, is Antipodes like the incredibly expensive one?
Yeah, when I went on holiday to Iceland, they were selling it there.
I remember one time my flatmate had bought something from Antipodes, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, it was a great deal. I got it on sale for $80." And yeah. I was like, oh, is this just the tester? And they were like, no, this is the
because it's so small.
It's so small.
I use The Ordinary and Ethique.
Ah, Ethique. If it's first thing in the morning or I don't have makeup on, then I use Jeunesse Balancing Soaking Drops. You can get them online or from the Facialist. Oh, no.
Who's that?
The Facialist by Ashley Scott in Auckland. Then I use an anti-redness serum from Mecca by Ren, which is sucked straight in.
I've been to Mecca before with my friend.
Then, oh, wow, this is extremely in-depth. I didn't realize this was all the the skincare. Then a Cetaphil moisturizer or the Taylor Hydrate Gel, because I love it when moisturizers go straight into my skin and don't sit on top of it. Amen to that.
Yeah, that's fair enough, Ben.
I'm good at remembering to wear sunscreen because I freckle so easily. There is so much weird stuff in sunblock these days. It's hard to find a good one, but I'm using Oasis Sun. They're a Kiwi brand and it's natural and good for sensitive skin. Oh, that's... I'm actually taking down some notes from this.
I have that one that's called like La Roche Posay or something because everyone was getting it.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's good, but I'm like brown, so it doesn't matter.
You know how I sunburn frankly. Easily, Rez?
Yeah.
They put me on these drugs. The pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
Big Pharma put me on these drugs. And one of the side effects is that my skin burns more easily. And so now it's like 5 minutes on a cloudy day.
Oh, my God. Done.
It's so ridiculous.
I got sunburned one time this summer. We sat outside for 2 hours direct sun because we couldn't get a seat at this fucking cafe. We had to pretend that we were fine with being outside. And it was in Wellington, so it was super windy and it was on this deck. And I got sunburned. And I looked like I was from the bloody Generation Z with this like red like nose and cheeks thing.
Oh, you had an e-girl look.
Yeah, I was like, now I look like it. Like on New Year's, I was like, I look like an e-girl.
I'm slightly dubious about facials because I don't like using really intense chemicals and stuff on my face, but I have to say that the sonophoresis treatment at About Face is pretty powerful.
I've heard of About Face.
I credit it with saving my skin not so long ago when it fell to pieces during filming.
Oh no. Because they always film Brokenwood in the winter.
Well, a new foundation caused her to break out. Plus outdoor winter conditions and feeling anxious about filming made for a very bad combo. And I felt so self-conscious and depressed about having a camera on me yucky face.
Aww. What season is this? I was just thinking his skin looked really good in the Cluedo episode.
It says me yucky face.
Isaac me yucky face.
Makeup. All the other sections are a lot shorter.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the end.
No, that was just the skincare section.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, they were really lucky with Fern that she, like, knew all this stuff.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm that interested in makeup. I certainly appreciate good quality products and the ability to skillfully apply it, but I never really had eye growing up. I would always just borrow a friend's. I still don't actually know how to apply eyeshadow. Fern, I just kind of close one eye and hope for the best.
Isn't that all of us all the time, though?
You just got... I'd close both eyes and hope for the best. That said, the makeup I do use is all Bobbi Brown. Interesting is choice.
Is it now? Bobbi Brown.
I used a lot of... I used almost exclusively Wet n Wild for a time.
This is you, right? This is not Fern.
This is me personally, just because they had some, like... They have cheap gothy stuff.
Yeah. I use ColourPop.
Oh, classy. I don't keep much in my handbag because everything gets wrecked, broken, comes undone, gets filled with crumbs. Is that just me? My Weleda lip balm is a guaranteed good time.
Oh, that's a Swiss one.
I try not to wear makeup on weekends. I love the feeling of having nothing on my face, and bare skin is so lovely. I love scaring at other people's bare skin. Is that creepy to say?
Harriet should have cut that out.
I love fragrances. What we are consciously or unconsciously doing every time we choose what fragrance to wear on any given day is selecting a persona or mood or quality. I recently started incorporating this into my acting because it struck me that applying this idea in a more specific way would be useful when creating a character. What kind of a person would wear what types of scent, etc. I know it sounds stupid, but I thought it would actually be a really useful tool in the same way that choosing costume and makeup is. What do you think that Detective Sim smells like?
I don't know, but someone who loves fragrance should smell good, right?
I mean, but it's Fern who loves fragrance.
Yeah, but she can't make herself smell different.
She just sees that she does.
But, I mean, she's not going to be putting, like, an ugly old coffee smell on herself when she's Kristen.
I think...
That doesn't make sense.
I think Kristen smells like Rexona.
No, Breen 100% smells like Rexona.
Breen smells like... Yes, Breen smells like...
Bought him yeah. some Rexona.
Breen has all-in-one body wash, Rexona body wash.
Oh, absolutely.
But I don't think, do you think Kristen would wear perfume? I don't think so.
Not unless she was going on one of her terrible dates.
Oh, I miss fanfic Breen with his special lavender.
Oh, it's lavender oils.
Okay, well, we'll take emails about what people think Detective Sims smells like.
We've got a Russian email address.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't remember what it is.
Okay, we're up to the last section.
Mm.
You ready?
Yeah.
Lifestyle.
Oh, I thought it was going to be lipstick.
I really like lying. Well, she already does. She doesn't like makeup.
Yeah. I really like lying.
I really like. I mean, she is an actor.
Ooh,
I really like lying under an Omnilux light at about face, or I love getting a full body massage, especially if involves being wrapped up in something like a cocoon. My beauty philosophy is don't get in the way of your body. Don't presume you know better. Don't necessarily add stuff to your skincare or makeup routine. Usually taking stuff away is the best option. I love shopping for new beauty and skincare. A little bit of contradiction there. Mecca is my favorite. In saying that, I always end up talking myself out of buying new things because I think it's the worst kind of consumerism. Wow, really going back and forth on this one.
Well, this is what happens. You're like, oh, I want to be like anti-consumerism. I don't want to be using like all these bottles and stuff. And then you buy this like fucking pumice scrub wrapped in cardboard from Christchurch, and then it hurts.
Yeah, like, I mean, my favorite thing in the world is buying things, but I just end up with too many things, and so I'm constantly selling things, and I'm not really
involved with buying and selling so much.
It's really annoying. I sold this keyboard and I had to make a box for it.
Oh god. That's why people always do pickup only, but then someone has to come to your house, which is worse.
It is worse. And also, I hate having a Facebook Marketplace is good because people always want to deliver it to you.
Do they?
Which is funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really funny.
They deliver
it because they want to get rid of it now.
Yeah. These people delivered a sofa to our house.
Wow.
Same day. They were like, we have to do it today.
I've never done any. We had some furniture to get rid of recently, but I didn't want to do Facebook Marketplace because it was too embarrassing because all your Facebook friends could see it. So all these people you went to school with having to know that you need to get rid of an old shelf.
Tilda Swinton would have to be my beauty icon. She is what she is, and that is so compelling. I think she is so beautiful. My favorite beauty product is actually just a warm flannel or muslin cloth. There's nothing like pressing one on your tired, dirty face at the end of the day. Thinking of a beauty mistake, I dyed my hair black once, then wanted to go back blonde. I decided to do it on Christmas Day. I went orange. Well, I went yellow at the roots and orange at the lengths. That's what your teenage years are for, though, aren't they? Learning.
Bleaching your hair on Christmas Day.
Iconic. I love that.
This is like, yeah.
If I had a magic wand, it would be for one Munty droopy eyebrow that doesn't sit up as high as my other one. Stupid Munty thing. We don't need any more beauty products. There are a lot that need to be uninvented. The end. You've been listening to the Frog and Cheetah Brokenwood Mysteries podcast. I've been Amelia. You can find me on Twitter at Mealy_worm.
And you can find me at Rebecca K. Riley. And you can find the podcast at Frog and Cheetah on Instagram.
We would love it if you could tell all of your friends to buy poetry. Buy local poetry.
Wherever you are.
Whatever's local to you.
We've got listeners all over the place, and I don't know what's local to them.
Make sure you recommend the poetry to your friends and you rate it 5 stars on iTunes or whatever.
Oh, the podcast. I thought you meant your friends' poetry books. Buy a local poetry book and rate it 5 stars on Goodreads.
You should. You should do it. That's my advice. That's my advice to you. You know, if I can take it or leave it.
Tweet about our podcast and say that it's definitely real.
Oh, yeah. Do a tweet about the podcast.
Or Instagram about the podcast. Not a Facebook post.
We're keeping it off Facebook.
Facebook Marketplace.
Sell a CDR of...
Do a TikTok.
All right, I gotta go. It's too hot.
It's too hot. Bye.
What do you call this Mickey Mouse house of a town?
Brokenwood. It's called Brokenwood.